This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of July 26th, 2021, brought to you by First Person Advisors, a subsidiary of NFP. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. To get into this week's edition, we need to start with the podcast from March 9th, 2020. The subject was the hotel market and the huge pipeline of hotel projects that had been proposed for downtown Indianapolis. Now, by that point, we had an inkling that the coronavirus could disrupt the hospitality market in some way, but most of the conversation was about nuts and bolts challenges like financing and city approvals that were delaying construction. The downtown hotel market at the time had about 7,200 rooms, which had served the city well through a Super Bowl, a couple of Final Fours, all the major conventions that come downtown annually. What was a bit mind-blowing at the time was that there were 19 new hotel projects in the pipeline at some point in the planning or development process. If they were all completed, it would add another 4,200 rooms downtown. Obviously, there were concerns about overbuilding. And in the podcast, IBJ reporter Mickey Shuey and I discussed the projects that appeared to be on the ropes and which ones were most likely to make it. Obviously, just a couple weeks later, everything went cattywampus. Now, 16 months later, the hotel market is finally on the mend, but we still have a lot of questions about whether the city's tourism and convention sectors, two of the anchors of downtown's economy, will be able to return to full strength in the foreseeable future. Now, you might think, after the pandemic shutdowns last year, that most of those 19 projects we talked about 16 months ago have been abandoned or put on hold indefinitely. Mickey tells us in this week's podcast that is not the case. Three of those projects actually were finished during the pandemic. Three more are expected to open by the end of the year. Several more have firm development schedules. According to Mickey's reporting, only three are definitely on hold. This week, we shed some light on the new entries in downtown's hotel market, the status of the game-changing projects that are still in the pipeline, and we discuss why there appears to be so much optimism for the Indianapolis market. Here's our discussion. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the podcast Mickey Shuey, IBJ's real estate and hospitality reporter. How are you doing, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Mason.
Sure. But please bring us up to date on the status of hotel projects that were planned for downtown. Because if I'm a casual observer, I'm thinking, okay, after the pandemic, at least half of those had to have been canceled. Why wouldn't they be canceled? But I understand that's really not the case. So where are we?
So surprisingly, the hotel market has actually stayed pretty stable over the past year and a half through the pandemic. Three hotels have actually opened since last December, and there's at least three more expected to open by the end of this year. And there's at least 3,200 to 3,500 rooms still in the works in the pipeline right now, with a few projects stalled, but really just trying to understand what the market is, and we'll get into that. But the hotel market and development market is actually still pretty solid right now.
I have to say, I mean, we started coming back downtown about 6 weeks ago or so, and it just blew my mind to see one of these projects completed. And maybe I stayed at home for too long, but it really is pretty impressive. And just kind of an emotional standpoint, it's kind of heartening to see some of these projects being completed. Can you give me a rundown of the three hotels that already have opened?
Sure. So the True by Hilton, which is on the south side of downtown at Illinois and Merrill, that has about 148 rooms, and it was a $23.5 million. New construction project that opened in February. And then you had the Town Place Suites, a Marriott property, which is about a block away from the True. That's about $17.5 million in new construction for 146 rooms. That opened about 6 weeks after the True did. And then the Bottle Works, which is an independent brand, it opened in December. And that's on the northeast end of Mass Ave. with 143 rooms, and it's part of that massive $300 million Bottleworks District development. And it's actually a reuse of the former Coca-Cola bottling plant.
Right. Yeah. Very handsome hotel.
It is.
I poked my head in there the other day. It was pretty cool. Now, why these three? Is there a common denominator for why these were the ones that opened?
Really, it's because they were already underway when the pandemic hit. They were at least a few months along. In the case of Bottleworks, I think that was at least 6 to 8 months along when the pandemic hit. And it just did not make financial sense for them to stop building because, of course, at the time, people were thinking, well, we'll just get through this 6 to 8 week period and we'll be done with it. Little did we know that it would last a lot longer, but it just made more financial sense for them to continue with those projects.
Now, I noticed that size-wise, they're all basically boutique hotels. I mean, each one is like 140-some rooms. Does the fact that they're relatively modest in size, does that have anything to do with it?
Perhaps to the extent that they aren't these colossal projects that required a lot of financing from outside institutions. There was a lot of equity for the project already from the developer, so they didn't necessarily have to go to a bank and say, hey, we need $40 million for this project or to continue working on this project. So I think just the fact that they had everything in hand already because it was a modestly sized property really played into that.
So in these three instances, they weren't completely dependent on banks for loaning them money. They had if not all of the money already.
Right. I mean, most projects now really do require at least 20 to 30% down in equity before a project can even get approved for financing. And that was before the pandemic. It's not really clear where things are going to go moving forward, but even beforehand, it was a lot of capital had to be put into a project for it to even get financing.
Now, which are the three hotels that we can expect to open by the end of the year?
First, you have the Hotel Indy, which is a tribute by Marriott hotel. It's really leaning into the Indianapolis brand. It's going to feature a bunch of artwork from the Colts, Pacers, IndyCar, things like that, and focus on a lot of the historic residents of Indianapolis, like Madam C.J. Walker, Steve McQueen. You have a lot of that history infused into this hotel, and that's going to open in the fourth quarter of 2021 on the corner of Delaware and East Washington Street. It's actually a former law office. That's going to have 90 rooms, and it's actually a $35 million adaptive reuse of that building. It initially was $25 million, and then it got bumped up to $35 kind of midway through the pandemic, so that way they could finish things out.
That's been a fascinating project to watch. It's, you know, one of these, like, late 60s, early 70s concrete buildings. I mean, it just looks like it's made out of slabs of concrete. And they actually built on, like, one or two floors on top.
They did. They built on a whole nother floor, really intended as kind of like a rooftop type floor. Honestly, when I heard this project the first time, I was like, how's that going to work? Yeah. And honestly, I have not had a chance to tour the facility yet, but from what I've seen of the construction and the build quality that they're putting into it, it seems like it's going to work well.
Yeah, as my wife would say, it's pretty fancy.
Yeah.
And the and we have announced this already, or we've reported this, that their restaurant, internal restaurant, is going to be called, is it the Holman?
Yeah, it'll be called the Holman after the Holman family, really the matriarch and patriarch of the Holman family who bought Indianapolis Motor Speedway in 1945, essentially saving the track and holding on to it until Roger Penske bought it in late 2019. That's going to have a bunch of Holman family photos. It's going to lean into the history of IMS. And it's through a partnership with the IMS Museum, actually, because they own the rights to the Holman family name, image, and likeness.
What is another hotel that is about to open?
So then you have the Hampton Homewood Hotel, which is on Vermont Street, kind of over by IUPUI. That's going to be a dual brand hotel with 231 rooms. It's about $40 million in adaptive reuse. It's a former church, actually. they're renovating the church and building a structure surrounding that, essentially, and enveloping it. And that's going to open in the fourth quarter.
And that was something, it feels like, that also they'd made a good amount of progress on before the pandemic.
They had. It did keep getting pushed back throughout the pandemic a bit, but that's going to open in fourth quarter. And actually, it sounds like there's going to be a McAllister's Deli that's going to be in there on the first floor. So they are making progress on that one. And then the last one is the Aloft Hotel. That's a Marriott brand. I'd be lying if I told you that I wasn't surprised by this, because there's been a lot of questions about this hotel even before the pandemic. I remember walking around downtown in the weeks before you and I last talked about hotels, and they still had signage on their windows that said opening in fall of 2019.
Yeah.
So we're really not sure what the deal was about why that hotel got stalled. The developer really hasn't answered that question quite yet, but they did say that it gets stalled further because of the pandemic. But it sounds like that one is actively under construction now, with plans to open this fall.
Yeah, when we walk to the city market for lunch, we usually take that back alley that goes through there, and we can see them working on it. I mean, it seems like they're making progress.
Yeah, and that's going to be a $15 million adaptive reuse of the former Stockyards Bank building on East Market.
Now, these three projects have something in common. I mean, they're all a different use of a pre-existing building. Is that significant in any particular way, or just kind of a statement about what hotel development is like now, where they're willing to go in and instead of build something new, kind of borrow the character of an existing building?
I mean, I think that in a city like Indianapolis that has a lot of buildings that people care about, there's less inclination to tear down a perfectly good building to replace it with something new if it can be saved. I think there's also something to be said about the fact that these developers, they really wanted to try to do something different with each of these properties. I mean, it's not often that you have a church incorporated into a hotel. And it's not often that you have a former concrete behemoth law office incorporated into a hotel project. So it really comes down to the vision. I mean, the Aloft in its way is different, but at the same time, we have seen some office buildings adaptively reused. But this is in a different part of downtown for that to happen.
Okay, let's take a quick break to digest this information. This is the IBJ podcast.
One size does not fit all. Your employees demand a flexible benefits program. Meet them where they are with ImproveMint, a reimbursement benefit that finally makes sense for your people. Learn how it works at firstpersonadvisors.com/perks.
Okay, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ podcast. We're talking with IBJ's Mickey Shuey about the many hotel projects in the development stage or otherwise still in the pipeline for downtown Indianapolis. Now, why is there enough confidence in the downtown Indianapolis hotel market after the pandemic? The developers are opening. I should be careful about saying after the pandemic, as we'll talk about soon. I'm going to cross my fingers as we speak. But developers already are opening their projects, or they're about to open their projects, and we have more projects that are at some point in the pipeline. Why the confidence in our market?
It's really because Indianapolis does not rely as heavily on the same types of visitors that other cities do. Indianapolis is very convention heavy, which is a plus and a minus in a way, as we learned during the pandemic. But really, that convention traffic is really starting to pick back up. It actually started back last year, even in late summer. But there's a lot of confidence in the tourism industry right now as it relates to hospitality and what developers think that they can stomach in terms of their developments. So that really plays a major part in Indianapolis's recovery, because if it was just business travel, which is a key component for weekdays, if that was all Indianapolis relied on, then we would probably be hurting as much as a lot of other big cities are.
So I know one of the key figures in determining the viability of a hotel market is occupancy, which basically means how many rooms are occupied at any given time. If all the rooms were occupied, you'd have 100% occupancy. So before the pandemic, the occupancy rate in downtown Indianapolis was about 73%, which in the hotel market is great. Where is downtown now in terms of occupancy?
So for the four-week period ending the second week of July, it basically was a month period, the occupancy was at 65%. And compared to 2019, which had 73%, as you mentioned, that is far and away better than I expected, than I think a lot of people expected to be this soon after the last surge in numbers for coronavirus.
Yeah, that blows my mind. I mean, honestly, I never expected it to get back up to that level. And where are these people? We walk around downtown. I don't know if you know, you experience the same thing that I do, but I mean, downtown still feels very stark and empty a lot of the time.
Right. And a lot of that is because there is such heavy traffic on weekends when a lot of the office workers aren't down here that they're not seeing that overflow of the convention center or even activity downtown because they're just not there to see it. A lot of people are still hesitant about coming downtown on the weekends for any number of reasons, including the pandemic, that they assume that things happening during the week are also happening on the weekends. But the convention center is still bringing in big events. I mean, they have several big events coming up. They just had PopCon, which had, I think, about 20,000 people this year.
Oh, really?
The convention center is still seeing a lot of traffic, and that's where these numbers are coming from, the 65%. That's not to say that we're seeing the same figures that we were before the pandemic, because we are not.
So do experts believe that the hesitancy that we have to reestablish as much business travel as we had before the pandemic, is that going to be the thing that really keeps us from matching that 2019 figure for a while?
I think so. I think there's a lot of factors at play, but certainly that lack of business travel is going to knock us down a few pegs in terms of our occupancy figures and the other metrics used to measure hotel success. But I think that to have a figure like 65%, which is only 8 percentage points lower than 2019, I mean, we're not even talking 2020 at this point, because experts are all like, yeah, 2020 is just a lost year. There's no reason to compare to 2020 at this point. It really is a remarkable thing.
How is Indianapolis doing compared to other cities, let's say in terms of hotel projects?
So certainly Indianapolis is doing fairly well comparably in the Midwest against its counterparts like Nashville and Columbus, which of course have their own various projects going on. But when you look at the major metros like New York, Atlanta, Los Angeles, those are of course leading the pack. I mean, New York has 145 hotels with almost 25,000 rooms in their pipeline right now.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So I mean, those cities are to be expected to be in those conversations, but Indianapolis seems to be doing fairly well as a moderate sized Midwestern city.
The 800 pound gorilla in the hotel pipeline for us is the 814 room Hilton that would be on Pan Am Plaza, adjacent to the Indiana Convention Center. And that project is being developed by Kite Realty Group, which I think is significant because that is a local and publicly traded company. And there was a lot of fanfare when this project was announced in 2018. This was a way that the city could take the next step as a convention host and host multiple large conventions at the same time. What is the status of that project?
So that project is moving ahead. The city signed an agreement with Kite earlier this year in January, basically laying out all the foundation for this project to move ahead. It is expected to cost about $300 million and get underway by the end of 2022. They're trying to take a little bit more time so that way financing can be secured and they can see where the hotel market is. But the agreement does specify that this project is going to get underway by the end of 2022.
Okay. Now, there is a companion project that Kite also is developing nearby that would have 600 rooms. What is the status of that?
So that one's a little bit more convoluted, and we won't necessarily get into all the specifics of that. But That project will be held until at least 2026 to give the Signia project a little bit of breathing room. The city and Kite want to be able to look at the occupancy figures for the first hotel, see how things are going there, make sure that the absorption of those rooms is going well before they even consider adding another hotel to that block. So that one is still under consideration, and there's actually even a clause in the agreement between the city and Kite that if the city ultimately wants to move ahead with that project after a certain amount of time and Kite does not, then the city could find an alternative developer for that particular property.
Oh, wow.
Which is standard in these sorts of deals that have multiple moving parts. So it's just a failsafe for the city, essentially, if Kite decides that it doesn't want to be in the hotel business because they...
Hotel business.
Right. Because they did announce this week that they are taking a bigger bite of the retail market as well with a merger with Retail Properties of America. So this deal should help them in terms of securing financing because now with retail properties under their command, they will have more properties to point to when they're going to lenders. But it's still going to be a completely separate project from their retail portfolio.
Yeah.
They have made that very clear.
Well, that merger hasn't closed yet.
Of course. Of course.
But it does turn Kite into $7.5 billion
company? Yes, that would be their total value as a company, and they would be the fifth largest shopping mall real estate investment trust and the ninth largest overall retail investment trust. So they'd be taking a bigger chunk of the market.
And the Simon Property Group, also headquartered in Indianapolis, would be the first.
Yes. Yes, they would.
There you go. Oh, now tell me about the other two projects besides the 600-room Kite project that we know are definitely on hold.
One is the Moxie AC Hotel. That's a dual-branded Marriott property that would be near the intersection of South Meridian and Georgia Street. That would be developed by a very experienced partnership of White Lodging, which owns and operates the JW Marriott, and an REI, which is co-owners with White Lodging on the downtown Marriott. Those brands are actually also the leading forces behind the opposition to this larger Pan Am project, but that's a story for another day. But this proposed hotel would have 245 rooms on seven floors, and that project would be about $60 million. And right now they're waiting to just see how the market levels out over the next year or two.
Yeah, it seems like they would have the means and obviously the expertise to do this project. You know, what has convinced them to hold off?
Really, they want to make sure that there's going to be an appetite for their hotel. I mean, they don't want to open a hotel and have it only get 20-30% occupancy because the market hasn't bounced back yet. They're pretty confident that the market is going to bounce back, and they're kind of moving ahead with that in mind, but they're not ready to break ground yet because they just want to give it a little bit more time.
And the third is what? It's relatively close to that one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually just up about a block north. It would be the Morrison Opera Place building at South Meridian and Maryland Streets. It was a very bold project from Bruce Bodner, who owns the Morrison Opera Place. That project would have been essentially 18 stories built on top of the existing structure, and it would have had 220 rooms, some apartments, and cost also about $60 million. I have not had an opportunity to talk to Bruce over the past couple weeks, but last I spoke with him, he's still trying to kind of figure out what he wants to do there. He had been seeking some city incentives for the project, but it doesn't seem like the city really has an appetite to back a project of that type right now. So that
back it with incentives, for example.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Mm-hmm. So I do know that he is back to marketing the former Hard Rock Cafe space in the on the first floor, I should say. So that shift indicates that he's at least tabling that project for a little while.
Now, you mentioned that we do have several of our big convention groups coming back this year. We have, I think, the FFA, FDIC International. That's the firefighters.
Yes.
We'll be in downtown. I like to call it the Firefighters Convention, Gen Con, Performance Racing Industry event. I assume that people in the hospitality industry are going to be watching these very carefully to see how that plays out.
Absolutely. I mean, Indianapolis is not going to be the only city that's doing conventions. I mean, Las Vegas is doing them. Orlando's doing them. Even cities like Nashville and Columbus are doing them to an extent. But Indianapolis really took a very hard stance that the city wants to be back in conventions. It wants to get back to business and start bringing people back. So the industry is going to be closely watching Indianapolis, just as it did for that NCAA tournament, just as it has for the Sweets and Snacks Expo a few weeks back, because Indianapolis really has a chance to prove its value as a convention city. So it's really about just trying to get back to business.
Well, this is great. This is a great story for us this week. And thanks so much for your reporting. And obviously, we're going to check back on this in the next few months.
Thanks so much for having me.
My thanks again to Mickey Shuey. Again, you can check out his full story on the state of the downtown hotel market in the latest issue of IBJ. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other strong stories in this week's paper I want to draw to your attention. As we just discussed, Indianapolis-based Kite Realty Group Trust is on track to become one of the country's largest retail real estate investment trusts with the acquisition of a Chicago-based competitor. Mickey explains in this week's issue how the deal could give Kite new leverage for loans, lease negotiations, and redevelopment opportunities. Also this week, John Russell takes us inside the city's newest publicly traded company, Point Biopharma, which is developing radioactive compounds to treat cancer patients. In addition to profiling the company, John explains how the emerging field of nuclear medicine is finding a home in central Indiana. And Emily Ketterer explains how lawmakers and citizen groups are preparing for the state's highly contentious redistricting process, which typically leads to accusations of gerrymandering. And again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to ibj.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.